The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Lots to get to, lots to keep up with in this ever-changing world. I'll start with a text message, since I get about two of those a week. That's significant in and of itself. But this one comes from the UK government, and it says, new rules in force now. You must stay at home. You must stay at home. That's coming from Great Britain, of all places. These are not normal times that we're witnessing. In fact, we're witnessing a total meltdown. It's descended into darkness, madness. You want proof that we're living in an upside-down world? We're seeing it every day. You want proof that we're living in the last days? Some of the newspapers, not nearly enough of them, but some of them, The Telegraph, it says, end of freedom. That's on the front page. End of freedom. We're talking about Great Britain. What used to be the British Empire, the champion of freedom. The Sun, its headline says, house arrest. That's what it is for some 70 million people. There's obviously some exceptions, going to the supermarket, things of that nature. But this is quite a stunning turn of events. Somebody said, I think it was a tweet, they commented on how many decades they've lived in. The 1980s, the 1990s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and then into the 2020s. And then he said March after that, the month of March. A decade within this one month, we're seeing these transformative events, so many of them, all happening at once. No public gatherings in Britain of more than two people. Two people! That's what the Prime Minister expects. All the shops shut down, except for the supermarkets, other necessities. We'll maybe develop a list later of what those might be. But this is pretty strict. It's a total shutdown. And there's nothing, if you notice, and we've played some clips, but if you notice, these mayors, these governors, these world leaders that impose these kinds of regulations and restrictions, they're not referring back to English common law or the English Constitution. You know, the mayor of New York's not getting up and saying, well, according to the U.S. Constitution, this is what we're putting in place. Or the mayor of New Jersey, or rather the governor of New Jersey, saying, I don't know if it was the governor, but it was a state official, saying that if you violate these new regulations, you're going to jail for 6 months. And there's really no explanation for how this works. Well, what about a right to a trial or any of those things? But there's just been so many wild decrees and no foundational law to pin it on. This bill giving the police here in the UK the power that they now have, it's not even passed through Parliament yet. This is certainly some pretty compelling evidence that, as my father has written, our nations are under attack. Look at how quickly, look at how easy it is for government, even in Western free societies, to just take away liberty, to take away these freedoms that, admittedly, the general public, we do take it for granted. We talk about that a lot on this program and at our website. There's obviously an oncoming generation that is not in any way prepared to fight for freedom. I'm not saying literally taking to the streets. I'm not suggesting even disobeying new rules and regulations. I'm just pointing out what many others should be pointing out. This is a stunning turn of events. This is coming out of Great Britain. So easy to take these freedoms, these liberties that we've had for so long. In this case, in the case of Britain, centuries, going back all the way to the Magna Carta, all the way back to the 1200s. Or if you're in the United States, the 1700s. All of it's just gone with one decree. Well, it's just temporary. It's just for a few days. Well, they're not even saying that, are they? They're saying few weeks at the least. Prime Minister Johnson last night put these regulations in place and said that he'd review them, not tomorrow or in two or three days, in 3 weeks. So at a minimum, it's 3 weeks. This is some from the statement last night by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, clip 11.
You must stay at home, because the critical thing we must do to stop the disease spreading between households, that is why people will only be allowed to leave their home for the following very limited purposes. Shopping for basic necessities as infrequently as possible. One form of exercise a day, for example, a run, walk, or cycle, alone or with members of your household. Any medical need to provide care or to help a vulnerable person. And travelling to and from work, but only where this is absolutely necessary and cannot be done from home. That's all. These are the only reasons you should leave your home.
335 deaths as a result of this virus here in the UK. 335 deaths in a nation of 70 million, and the whole nation, total shutdown. A total shutdown. 8,000 people will die from the flu this year, and I don't need to go down the list, do I? I've been doing it every other program. 600,000 dying per year in the United Kingdom. And among the 600,000, 335 brings on a total shutdown. That's direct from the Prime Minister last night, national television. He went on to say this, clip 12.
You should not be meeting friends. If your friends ask you to meet, you should say no. You should not be meeting family members who do not live in your home. You should not be going shopping except for essentials like food and medicine. And you should do this as little as you can. And use food delivery services where you can. If you don't follow the rules, the police will have the powers to enforce them, including through fines and dispersing gatherings. To ensure compliance with the government's instruction to stay at home, we will immediately close all shops selling non-essential goods, including clothing and electronic stores, and other premises, including libraries, playgrounds and outdoor gyms and places of worship. We'll stop all gatherings of more than two people in public, excluding people you live with. And we'll stop all social events, including weddings, baptisms, and other ceremonies, but excluding funerals.
At least they don't have to pull us away from our spouses. That's the new rules. Now, what's almost humorous in this, Richard pointed this out this morning, is that Britain doesn't have a huge police force. So, but these are definitely police state regulations. I gave the program last week, remember, we're all China. This is what they do in China. This is how the Western world is battling the Wuhan flu. We're doing it the way China did it. We're doing it with a complete and total lockdown. Never mind the freedoms, never mind the liberties, never mind the Magna Carta, never mind the Constitution, never mind common law, never mind law. We got to do it. It just has to be done. People of Great Britain not allowed to leave their homes without government permission? Is that startling? Really, what's most startling of all is that people in Great Britain aren't really upset about it. They're not fazed by it. And that speaks to what else we've written about at thetrumpet.com over the years. The loss of our identity. The fact that it revolves around the concept of liberty and limited government. Are we seeing much limited government in the nations of Israel today? Peter Hitchens, we quoted from an article he wrote yesterday. He tweeted out last night in response to the Prime Minister's speech. Anyone else out there still have any regard for liberty? It is striking that the country of Magna Carta, habeas corpus, and the Bill of Rights should be put under house arrest by a prime minister. This is the way the world ends, he said. Not with a bang, but with a giggle. And, of course, he's immediately attacked by the mob. The mob who says he's the problem for bringing up Magna. Are we suspending habeas corpus as well? What about the right to a trial? All of these things that are embedded, that are enshrined in our founding documents. He said in a follow-up tweet, until tonight, I was free to leave my home whenever I chose, for whatever purpose I chose for, as long as I chose and go wherever I chose, a freedom I used to the full. Now all of those freedoms have been extinguished. All of those freedoms extinguished with one speech. Forget about Parliament. Forget about the common law. Forget about Constitution. It's a virus. And you might catch it. So there's a complete and total shutdown. Lastly, he said in one of his tweets, but what's interesting is how many people attack me for attacking this blatant assault upon liberty. This is how you can tell the country is finished. Some strong words from Mr. Hitchens there, and he's one of the few. Most in the media, they've just gone right on along with this. There's a few shocking headlines. But outside of that, Richard found some articles, a couple of good ones that spiked online. They're the last line of resistance. Spiked Online, whatever that is. Whatever, I assume it's a UK publication. But they asked the question many should be asking. Why are so many journalists clamoring for a police state? Why do they want it? Why are they clamoring for it? Why are they clamoring for it in the United States? These were just a couple of issues ago. You'll remember we had the age of protest. And again, don't get me wrong. I'm not encouraging people to take to the streets. I'm just stunned at what moves them to the streets. It's the little Greta girl. It's climate change. It's the election of Donald Trump. It's the trip of Donald Trump. He's coming into London. We got to take to the streets. Then we suspend all the freedoms in the UK, and you don't hear a peep. Nothing. What is happening to our people, to our nations? The things we used to fight for, we've just totally surrendered. And the things we wouldn't have dreamed about fighting for generations ago, that's all we care about. Government programs. The expansion of government. Big government. Big brother. This is right out of Orwell's book. It says, in the age of COVID-19, the media clamor for a total shutdown of all public life and for the police or army to line the streets. The clamor has become deafening, it says. Some journalists have become positively unhinged in their demands for a police state. Piers Morgan has been ahead of the curve, blasting the COVIDiots who need locking up for their own good. The Daily Mail breathlessly reports that police could be on hand to break up anyone found outside in a group. Says the effect of this reporting is to say that there is something unusual or strange about not wanting to arrest people for leaving the house. The implication is that the most basic freedoms, which are enjoyed even under most authoritarian regimes today, to leave your house, to go to the park, to meet with other people without letting the state know your purpose, are laughable throwbacks to a bygone era of careless anarchy. It's an upside-down world. Now, I think there is some hope. There's some light at the end of this dark tunnel we're in at the moment. I'll come to that in the next segment. But in the bigger picture, like Peter Hitchens says, we're finished. We are finished. Those foundational institutions that used to mean everything to us. Here's a republic. Hold on to it if you can keep it, the founders would say. It's quite the experiment, but you better have religion and morality if you're going to be able to hold on to it, if you're going to have a strong or maintain a strong foundation. Spiked Online, in another piece, it says the authoritarian instincts of the chattering classes have been on full display in this crisis. You can see it in their daily pleas for Boris Johnson to turn the UK into a police state. You can see it in their sneering at people who visit parks or take a walk on the beachfront. And you can see it most disturbingly in their implacable rage against anyone who deviates from the COVID-19 script. Now, that we covered yesterday, remember? You have to stay to the script. If you don't stick to the script, then you're blotted out, or your post is removed, or you're shouted down. You must stick to the script. It says further on, in an emergency, freedom of speech doesn't stop being important. It becomes more important. Well, that's when you need freedom. That's when you need someone to present maybe another idea in case everyone's just following the sheep right off the cliff. Or what about Exodus 23, following a multitude to do evil? Herbert Armstrong was a voice crying in the wilderness, Isaiah 40. People weren't listening. People didn't want the truth. Read Ezekiel 33. The alarm is being sounded. But everyone's off. Even in a crisis, even at a time of crisis, they're fast asleep. It says here, and it's a liberty under threat, the speed and intensity with which questioning extreme responses to COVID-19 has become tantamount to a speech crime is alarming. I had a taste of it this weekend when I found myself in the eye of the storm over a Spectator piece I wrote questioning the wisdom of closing pubs. Peter Hitchens did too, after he wrote a Mail on Sunday piece questioning the COVID shutdown of society. Others who have wondered out loud if the freezing of social and economic life is the right response to this novel new virus have been hounded, shamed, reported to the Silicon Valley authorities. It says David Lammy calls us insane and dangerous and says our words should be unpublished. Unpersoning will be next. Questioning the lockdown will see you blacklisted from polite society. How swiftly, the article says, how swiftly we become McCarthyites. My father's written before about will worship. How easy it is for Satan to impose his will on the masses. He gets everyone whipped up into an irrational frenzy. Ezekiel, or rather Ephesians 2 in verse 2, he's the prince of the power of the air. A YouGov poll found that 76% in Britain strongly support the lockdown. 76%. That's an overwhelming majority. This is what everyone wants. Benjamin Franklin said those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Shall I read that again? It's from Ben Franklin. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. He says, in other words, you deserve the slavery that's coming. Earlier this week, well, I guess this would be last week, I read from that the healing booklet, that section where Mr. Armstrong just talked about the power of the medicine profession or Western medicine. He said in his booklet, Mr. Armstrong did, the medical fraternity is by far the largest in number. They have allotted a very huge sum of money to operate a lobby in Washington, D.C. to influence government legislation. The medical profession has become so powerful that an MD could quarantine even the President of the United States and enforce his virtual imprisonment in the White House. It says, in such an instance, the medical profession has even more power than the President of the United States. This is one of those instances. You're seeing just how powerful the medical profession is in the United States and here in Great Britain. And really, you see it even more intensified in Europe because of their beloved national health care. They love it. They worship it. They bow down before it. And they don't have all these extra beds, all these extra hospital beds or spaces during normal times. It's just about right. So when there is something just a little bit unusual or abnormal, this is what happens. We can destroy the economy, but we certainly can't destroy the NHS. We can destroy people's lives, their livelihood, their jobs, their income. But we certainly don't want to hurt the National Health Service. That's what they think. In Britain, in Italy, in Spain. You know, the other thing that this shows, I saw some video of people lying on the floor at hospitals in Madrid. Spain's being hit hard now as well. How many of these people that go to hospital, after this panic, how can you blame them? They all want to get tested. I saw another figure of the 10,000 positive tests a few days ago in New York. 35,000 tested negative for coronavirus. Why would that many more want to get a test? They don't even have the sickness. Well, if you were in this world and you didn't have God as your sure foundation, and you're hearing every night on Sky News, every night on CNN, if you get this, you're going to die. Of course they're panicked. Of course they're hysterical. What does it say, though, too, about the breakdown of the family? Sickness is not natural. It's not normal. It comes upon us because of our sins, our physical sins. And when it happens, we need to turn to God in repentance and make changes. When I've gotten sick, though, I go to bed and my beloved wife takes care of me. She helps me. And the roles can reverse if it's the other way around. But if you're living in a small apartment in Madrid, and even if you're a young man and you have no one to look after you, how many of them stagger to the hospital? This germ-infested facility where all the healthcare workers are catching the virus too. What a system. National healthcare, single-payer healthcare. The U.S. isn't much better, don't get me wrong. This is not God's world, to be sure. The devil's deceived the whole world. There is such a thing as a coronavirus, and it does spread, and it can be deadly for elderly people or for older people whose immune systems are compromised or their respiratory systems are compromised. But the reaction, the mass hysteria in response to this, Satan is exploiting this sickness for some very evil and devious and nefarious purposes. He is having a heyday for sure. The Surgeon General, he said earlier this week, the U.S. Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, this week is going to be bad. It's going to be bad. You've heard some of the quotes, the clips, the percentages. New York, as many as 80%. Ohio, today's the day. It's up to 400,000. It's been doubling every 6 days. California, at least 50%, probably more. There's a special running tonight on Channel 4 here in the UK. And here's a clip from it. Professor Hugh Montgomery talking about the spread of coronavirus. Clip 13.
Normal flu, if I get that, I'm going to infect on average about 1.3, 1.4 people, okay? If there was such a division.
Yeah.
And if those 1.3, 1.4 people gave it to the next lot, that's the second time it gets passed on. By the time that's happened 10 times, I've been responsible for about 14 cases of flu. This coronavirus is very, very infectious, so every person passes it to three. Now, that doesn't sound like much of a difference, but if each of those three passes it to three, and that happens at 10 layers, I have been responsible for infecting 59,000 people. Now,
I actually wasn't on top of that maths when you were doing that.
I wasn't on top of the math either. 59,000 cases of coronavirus from one person infected. 59,000. So you can see why it's not unique to New York or California. It's across the pond as well. Everyone's going to get it. I talked to a father of one of the dancers at my son's school before everything was shut down, and he conveyed the same sentiment. Well, we're all going to get it anyway. 59,000 people. Well, that clip goes on to point out how that our healthcare system is set up for just enough, basically. So we have to flatten that curve. We can't let them all come to the beloved NHS at once. We can't have a run on the hospitals. So this is what's done to flatten the curve. And even still, even as it's being done, even as the death rate plummets, you've got Dr. Tedros out there, the WHO. He still has a job. He still works as the director general of the WHO. He's the one that said 3.4%. His organization was really saying 4 to 5% in early February. Or I guess late February. And then he made the statement he did in early March. Going back earlier than that, of course, he was covering up for China. Then it wasn't that big of a deal because China was doing such a great job stamping it out. But somewhere along the line, and it's interesting to just think about the collusion, some of these senators that sold off a lot of stocks late January, early February. I just saw a headline today, Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, he sold off a lot of stock. How many people knew about not the disease, but the panic, the lockdown, the stock market crash? We're doing a little research on that. Hopefully we can get into that more, as I said, on the Saturday edition of the program. He said in his briefing yesterday, the pandemic is accelerating. You know why he said that? Well, because there's more cases of it this week, and it's really increasing. That's because there's more testing going on. Mass testing in New York and elsewhere. So yes, there will be more people. And there is an increase in deaths. That's true. In New Jersey, their top health official, she was asked in an interview this week, are you worried that you'll get the coronavirus eventually? And her response was, I'm definitely going to get it. We all are. We all are going to get coronavirus. So you think the statements about California or New York are outlandish? I guess you can't go any further than this. 100% we're all going to get it. And then you have the New Jersey, the Attorney General. He's announced that people who violate the stay-at-home order, they could face 6 months in jail and fines as well. 6 months in jail. I guess they don't even get a trial or anything. They just go straight to the slammer. That's New Jersey. Well, as I say, there are some signs that the madness could be taking a turn for the better, and we'll get into that when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Yeah, I turn 70 next week, Tucker, and I sent you a note about a week ago that something has been really heavy on my heart since this started. And, so I'm automatically in the high risk pool. And I'm, as Lieutenant Governor, I work 12 or 15 hours a day, mostly from home now, but I travel when I need to. I'm living smart, listening to the president, the CDC guidelines, like all people should. But I'm not living in fear of COVID-19. What I'm living in fear of is what's happening to this country. And, you know, Tucker, no one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. And that doesn't make me noble or brave or anything like that. I just think there are lots of grandparents out there in this country like me. I have 6 grandchildren. That what we all care about and what we love more than anything are those children. And I want to, you know, live smart and see through this, but I don't want the whole country to be sacrificed.
That's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick from Texas on Tucker Carlson's show last night, 70 years old, saying that I don't want to live in fear of the disease. I'm more concerned about my country. I'm more worried about my country's future. You do wonder how many people his age think the same way. You will never know it or find out because the media, they're not interested in that. They want to scare you. They want you to live in fear, at least for as long as Donald Trump's in office. Well, as I said on yesterday's program, he tweeted out Sunday night that he's not going to let the cure be worse than the disease itself or the problem. And then he came out in his press conference last evening and made some of the same points. Here's what President Trump had to say. Clip one.
America will again and soon be open for business. Very soon. A lot sooner than 3 or 4 months that somebody was suggesting. A lot sooner. We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself. We're not going to let the cure be worse than the problem. At the end of the 15-day period, we'll make a decision as to which way we want to go, where we want to go, the timing. And essentially, we're referring to the timing of the opening. Essentially, the opening of our country.
That's President Trump saying that it's not going to go on as long as some are saying. And he mentioned the 3-4 month period. That was Governor Cuomo, remember, over the weekend that said 4 months, 6 months could go on for even as long as 9 months. But we're not going to let the cure be worse than the problem. We will be opening up the country yet again, sooner than you think, he said last night. At MSNBC, they despise the president. Every single host on that program or network, they hate this president with a passion. This is what Lawrence O'Donnell had to say about the president's press briefing, clip two.
Today, the president said repeatedly, quote, "We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem." Donald Trump said that on Twitter. We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem. He then said it repeatedly in his White House coronavirus briefing that substitutes as his new version of a campaign rally. Dr. Anthony Fauci had no comment about what the president said at that briefing today because Dr. Fauci was not present at today's briefing.
That's Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. Fauci wasn't there. He wasn't there to protest. He's from Western medicine. The left right now, they worship him. He has final say. It's like the healing booklet brings out. He's the one with the most power in the country. Why isn't he at the press briefing? He has to be there. O'Donnell went on to say, look, there's no cure that's worse than death. It's like the comment from Friday, I think, from Cuomo. If we can get through this and save just one person, get through this shutdown, this lockdown, if it saves just one person, it's worth it. I'll be happy, he said. And Lawrence O'Donnell echoed that same thought last night. Just one life. One commentator at The Federalist tweeted out yesterday, every person lecturing you that economic suicide is necessary is still employed and collecting a paycheck. It's good business for MSNBC to scare you. The special tonight on Channel 4 here in the UK with the good doctor saying that one person can spread this to 59,000 people. That's probably going to get quite a lot of attention as well. Keep it going. Stir it up. Scare them to death. And then go home with your fat checks. There's probably some pretty fat ones in the media. But here he is, O'Donnell, reacting to how much power he thinks this president has or doesn't have with respect to this crisis. This is clip three.
The problem for Donald Trump is that he's not in charge of this one. Donald Trump has not closed down anything inside the United States. Donald Trump has not closed a single business in this country, not a single school. He hasn't closed anything. It's America's mayors and county officials and governors who have done that. Mostly the governors. The governors of New York and California have both closed down their states, and there is nothing Donald Trump can do about that. The governors of New York and California control more economic activity combined than most of the rest of the United States of America put together. And they are not going to reopen their states because of anything that Donald Trump says. Donald Trump didn't shut down anything, and so Donald Trump cannot reopen anything. Donald Trump is not in charge here. The governors are in charge.
Do you think the radical left is using this crisis to go after the president? You think they're weaponizing this crisis? After all that we've witnessed, after what you heard right there, after what you've heard from some of the mayors and the governors. Now, there's one in particular that's beginning to change his tune. I'll let you hear that in just a second. But this fight right now in Congress over this $1 trillion aid package and the Democrats pulling the rug out from under it right at the last, in my mind, it's probably just as well. Who wants to put another trillion on the books? They both want to spend. Spend, spend, spend. That's always the solution. But the Democrats put the brakes on it because they wanted to add all of these cherished items from the left-wing agenda that they know they can't get in under any other circumstances except during a national, a worldwide, in fact, a worldwide crisis. So they're trying to load it up with all these left-wing pets, favorites, all this pork barrel spending. James Clyburn, he's a Democrat from South Carolina. He said, we have to look at this as a tremendous opportunity to restructure. We have to look at this crisis as an opportunity. That's Rahm Emanuel. Don't let it go to waste. So even at this hour, they're plotting, they're strategizing. They're trying to grab hold of more power. And then you have Lawrence O'Donnell just gloating on TV. Donald Trump's not in charge here. Remember the last three or four times they thought, we've got Donald Trump now. Oh, yes. He's gone for good now. That's what struck me about his report last night, or his show, O'Donnell. He's saying that President Trump doesn't have any power. He's not in charge. The governors are. So he goes on then to talk about, guess which two governors he picks out? Well, of course, the governor of California and the governor of New York, the two most populous states in the union. Here's what he said about Governor Newsom, clip 4.
Governor Gavin Newsom, whose state controls more economic activity than any other state and has more people than any other state. Governor of California will not be listening to anything Donald Trump says about when Gavin Newsom should begin returning California to normal.
That's O'Donnell assuring his audience that Newsom is not, even if Donald Trump wants to say, hey, America is back open for business, California's not going to go along with that. And then here's what he said about the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, clip 5.
Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York has more coronavirus cases in his state than any other state. And in the biggest city in his state, Governor Cuomo has a street named Wall Street. And it will be Andrew Cuomo and not Donald Trump who decides when New York State and New York City and Wall Street get back to normal. And luckily for New York, Andrew Cuomo is smart enough to not listen to a word Donald Trump says about that.
Well, how do these two states, do these two governors, are they able to print money? Do they influence the Fed at all? Can they borrow from China, or are they more dependent on the federal government? Now, as I said yesterday, When and if Donald Trump says, hey, this is too much, we're not going to destroy ourselves in the process, he is going to be in for a fight. But how long? How long? Sam just pulled together some stats. I didn't have time to put it into my my notes. But this is from Forbes about California. According to January 2017, the study was based on a review of federal and state and local financial disclosures. In other words, that $1.3 trillion in debt is the amount to which California governments admit there could be a lot more. $1 trillion perhaps in pension liability alone. New York, there's stories about the Empire State leading the nation in the hidden debt. In fact, I saw one news briefing, Cuomo in front of the reporters, saying, well, we want to give relief to the citizens of New York in this way, in this way, in this way. And one reporter said, well, what about if you reduce the sales tax? It seems like that would be an immediate way that you could reduce the stress, the strain. And Cuomo said, our people looked at that, but we can't afford it. We can't afford to lower the sales tax during a time of national crisis. So how long would these states be able to hold out? Particularly when you have other governors and other states that would be quite happy to be up and running. Skip ahead, actually, to clip 8. This is Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. Clip 8.
Some people have said, well, you know, we just see New York. They've issued a shelter in place for the entire state. You know, shouldn't Florida do that? And I think given our circumstances, that would not be advisable. It would be a very blunt instrument. When you're ordering people to shelter in place, you are consigning a number, probably hundreds of thousands of Floridians, to lose their jobs. You're throwing their lives into potential disarray. And if that were something that were necessary statewide because the health comes first, you know, that would be one thing. But if you look at Florida's situation right now, this is not a virus that's impacting every corner of the state.
There's a governor of a pretty big state himself looking at the numbers and then stepping back and looking at the bigger picture as well. These states, if truth be told, California and New York, they are totally dependent on the federal government. Left to themselves, they'd go belly up. And these are the governors of those big states. Now, there's no doubt that they hate Donald Trump and his policies and everything about him and his administration. But keep in mind the prophecy. 2 Kings 14. Lawrence O'Donnell may say that, you know, there's no power there. He really doesn't have that much authority. The governors are in charge. But that's not what 2 Kings 14 suggests. Listen to Governor Cuomo. You've heard, we've been pretty hard on him the last few days. Some of the things he's said, some of the clampdown, the things he's closed down and shut down. As recently as just 2 days ago. And listen to what he said in his news briefing yesterday, and already, see if you can't tell that he's beginning to change his tune after 3 days of a shutdown. This is clip 6.
I take total responsibility for shutting off the economy in terms of essential workers. But we also have to start to plan the pivot back to economic functionality, right? You can't stop the economy forever. So we have to start to think about, does everyone stay out of work? Should young people go back to work sooner? Can we test for those who had the virus resolved and are now immune? And can they start to go back to work? There's a theory of risk stratification that Dr. Katz, who's at Yale University, is working on, which is actually very interesting to me, but which says isolate people, but really isolate the vulnerable people. Don't isolate everyone, because some people, most people, are not vulnerable to it.
He wasn't thinking that way Friday. But now, okay, if they're vulnerable, then quarantine them or protect them, isolate them. But we've got to start thinking about pivoting back to economic functionality. This is the governor of New York. Maybe Lawrence O'Donnell's broadcast last night was specifically for him to make sure that he's committed to complete and total destruction of the economy, even in New York, so that we can get a better president. Cuomo went on to say this, clip 7.
Remember, you study the numbers across the countries that have been infected. The survival rate for those who have been infected is like 98%, right? A lot of people get it. Very few people die from it. So how do we start to calculate that in? We implemented New York pause, which stopped all the essential workers, et cetera. We have to start to think about New York forward.
Now, that is a pretty dramatic change in tone. Even just if you watch that or listen to it, can you sense more of a positive, hopeful tone? This is exactly what they pounced on the president for just a few days ago. How can you say anything positive? How can you give the American people a glimmer of hope? It's hopeless. Well, after a few days of whatever he's hearing or seeing, you heard his complaint yesterday in going through New York City. People weren't exactly abiding by all the new restrictions. But the tax revenue is going to plummet as well. And to his credit, he talked about the survival rate. And he too, if he's being honest, he's got to be looking at that mortality rate saying, well, maybe this isn't as deadly or as lethal as we thought from the beginning. And this is a point that we've made about President Trump back in early March when he was trying to calm people down. And the WHO came out and said 3.4%. That's the death rate. And he said, I don't agree with that at all. Then the panic set in. March 9, that was the key turning point. CNN, even Fox News, abandoning the president's position. And so basically, the reins of government, they're passed over to the medical profession, Western medicine. It's been that way for the last week and a half or so. Is that about to change? Well, if you are listening to the president, we're not going to let the cure, we're not going to let that destroy the nation. Yesterday, at the end of his press briefing, he focused in on that mortality rate and how that it's declining. You know the chart that we've put up there for you. Every day, it's going lower. Here's what the president said, clip 9.
But one of the things is the mortality rate, John. When we first started this, nobody knew anything about this particular virus. Very, very little. I mean, we started, if we were hearing numbers of 5%, that's an astronomical number. When the flu is 0.001 and 2 and 3, right? And so 5% would be an astronomical number. Now we're seeing numbers that may be less than 1, and that's not including the exercise that I just went through where many people don't report. So everybody getting very sick is reporting, but nobody getting, you know, not very sick. And that should be part of that equation. So that just keeps reducing the number. So the mortality rate is a, you know, that's a big, to me, that's a very big factor.
It's a very big factor because if it keeps going lower and lower and lower, what we're looking at here is a really bad flu season. Keep in mind that in this flu season right now, we've lost 23,000 Americans. With the Wuhan flu, what's it up to now? 500? 600? If it were to continue even with several hundred deaths per day, it would take quite a while just to rise to the level of influenza. That's the truth. Those are the statistics. And all of the talk early on that the death rate is just astronomically high here, we weren't told the truth. The president went on to say this, clip 10.
When we were hearing 3 and 4%, remember we had one day where we thought it was 5%, and we were getting a lot of bad numbers from countries that, I don't know why, but we were getting a lot of bad numbers. I do wish, our relationship's very good with China, but I wish they could have told us about this a little bit sooner, you know that. But the mortality rate's a big thing for me because I think we're very substantially under 1% now. It's still terrible. It's still the whole thing. The whole concept of death is terrible. But there's a tremendous difference between something under 1% and 4 or 5 or even 3%. So
a substantial difference. Substantially under 1%. It's moving ahead or further in that direction. Think about, again, if he does stand against the whole world, this could happen. I don't know for sure if it will, but we do know about that prophecy in 2 Kings 14 and verse 26. For the Eternal saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. There was no helper for Israel. So what did God do? So that Israel's name wouldn't be blotted out. He saved them by the hand of Jeroboam. That has been happening since 2016, and perhaps it's in a mini kind of way, perhaps it's going to be happening again and soon. It really does, I think, add another dimension to that Jeroboam prophecy. Well, I wish I had more time to expand on that some. Perhaps we can do it tomorrow. But we're out of time for today's broadcast. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.